This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
This week, it's all about new science that matters. A study funded by a founder of fracking finds the natural gas industry is still bleeding tons of methane into the atmosphere. The top body for American scientists warns we must act now to prevent climate catastrophe. And an international team confirms the world food supply will be hit hard in a changing climate. I'm Alex. Welcome to Radio EcoShock. First, to our continuing coverage of methane emissions from natural gas. What could be more timely after a deadly blast in New York City and a barrage of ads from the industry saying how green they are? Please notice, I take care in the first story to let you know who funded this assessment of the industry and some of the energy-friendly government labs who took part in it. Even so, they found a lot of leaking methane and super emitters in some states. Surprise, surprise, a new study finds methane emissions from natural gas systems have been greatly underestimated. Methane is a potent greenhouse gas, as you know. Is gas worth the risk? Is it better than coal? Let's find out from the lead author of a brand new study looking at methane escaping from the gas system. Dr. Adam R. Brandt is with the Department of Energy Resources Engineering at Stanford University. Dr. Brandt, welcome to Radio EcoShock.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Well, one of the first things I want to know is what led you to undertake this study of natural gas in America in the first place?
Sure. This study was commissioned by the Cynthia and George Mitchell Foundation. George Mitchell was one of the pioneering developers of hydraulic fracturing, and he had a long-term interest in ensuring that, you know, the gas industry, to the extent possible, reduced its environmental impacts and basically was as environmentally beneficial as possible. So his family foundation, he recently passed away, has focused on natural gas environmental impacts and trying to reduce these impacts. There's been a lot of studies recently that show really mixed evidence. Some studies report higher emissions, some studies report lower emissions, and so there's been a fair amount of confusion in the literature in recent years about what the real impacts of natural gas are. So the Mitchell Foundation sponsored this study to basically convene a group of experts from around the country. We had about 15 experts, and we looked at the existing evidence. So we tried to say, given all the studies that have been published in the last 20 years, let's review all of them, and what can we say on balance do we know about leakage from the natural gas system?
Yes, you had a huge team behind you with many names I recognize from the universities, NOAA and the Lawrence Livermore Lab, even the U.S. Department of State. So, Adam, a couple of years ago, we had Robert Howarth of Cornell on this program. He was among the first to try and figure this out. Why don't we start right at the fracking wellhead? Howarth said, and we have the video, the industry vents a lot of methane for a couple of weeks before attaching the well to the pipes or to the trucks. Did you start right at the wellhead?
Yeah, so our study goes from the wellhead all the way to the use in your homes for your water heaters or home heaters. So we look at the entire quote-unquote life cycle of the natural gas industry. We do look at hydraulic fracturing. It actually appears, we find overall, our overall result is that it appears that EPA is underestimating methane emissions by something like 50% relative to what we observe in the atmosphere at the largest scales. And we look specifically at natural gas and find that we think that the evidence suggests that natural gas emissions are underpredicted as well. With respect to fracking, we find that fracking is not likely to contribute a major portion of this excess emissions load. What we find is that fracking may contribute to the extent that producers, when they're hydraulically fracturing, are venting the gas rather than capturing the gas that flows back. Hydraulic fracturing may contribute. But even if you take a worst-case scenario for emissions from hydraulic fracturing using an accepted methodology from the literature for estimating these, it does not look like hydraulic fracturing is the key determinant of this. This looks like this is a problem with the gas industry as a whole. There's some interesting studies from the late 1990s and early 2000s, and this was well before fracking became a major technology being applied at scale, and those studies also found higher emissions when hydraulic fracturing was not prevalent. And so there's a variety of pieces of evidence that suggest to us that this is an issue with the gas industry more broadly not just hydraulic fracturing, although hydraulic fracturing may contribute.
Well, that's quite interesting because we've covered fracking quite a bit. Now, I want to follow this sort of step by step. Before we even get to the cities, we also have some leaky pipelines and some storage systems that have to vent anyway. What did you find out about that part of the natural gas pipeline system?
Yeah, so there's a variety of pieces of evidence. So after the gas is, the well is drilled and the gas is produced from the ground, there's a variety of processing stages that occur. There's compression to basically build up pressure in the gas for long-distance transport, and then there's transport in the these large-diameter pipelines that will take the gas across the country. And this is all before it ever gets to, you know, a city where it's going to be used. It appears, and there's a variety of studies, it appears that leakage from gas processing plants and gas compressors are consistently underestimated. So when people go to study these sources, these come out higher than EPA estimates. And so these have been found in a variety of studies. The most recent was a couple months ago. The earliest was probably in 2002 or so. And there's been a variety of studies of these stages of the gas process, and they do find higher emissions.
Okay, well, now getting to the cities on Radio EcoShock, we just had Dr. Nathan Phillips from Boston U describing his study of leaks in Boston and in Washington, D.C. Were you able to zoom out from that to estimate the leakage in all American cities or anything along those lines?
This is a real challenge. So the Phillips studies are very interesting out of first Boston and now recently Washington, D.C. There was also another study out of Los Angeles that we actually used to calibrate this. One of the challenges of the Phillips studies, especially the Boston study, is that they were able to find areas of the city where there was a lot of methane, but they had a real challenge in trying to take those local concentrations and say how much is leaking overall. There was a nice study out of Los Angeles, out of Caltech, where they flew airplanes all around the city, and they estimated that something like 3 to 4% of the gas was leaking from the distribution system and from our homes. And so we used that to essentially that study to calibrate what the emissions from the distribution system overall might be. And if that's at all prevalent, then this could be a major source. This could be a big contributor to this gap, is basically lots of leaking pipes around our homes and businesses and cities. There's about 2 to 2.5 million miles of small diameter pipe, mostly underneath our roads, homes and businesses around the country. So this is, you know, literally millions of miles of pipe with lots of joints that can be leaking, et cetera, et cetera. So it's a really big and complex system, and this could be a significant contributor according to an increasing amount of evidence.
Yes, 3 or 4%, that's a big loss when we look at it over the whole of America. Well, Adam Brandt, you talk about methane super emitters. What and where are those?
This is a very important point. So one of the things that we found from a variety of studies is that it looks like when you actually go out and you measure all the sources at a given, let's say, all the well pads in a given area or all the valves and flanges at a facility, most of the sources are not major emitters. So 98, 99% of sources are not going to be emitting, and it's really 1 or 2% that have this problem. Among that 1 or 2%, there's often a fraction of a percent, like 0.01%, that are just broken. A valve is stuck open. There's a crack or a hole in a pipe. There's been instances where people have found rusty pipes that are essentially corroded with holes in them, and the gas is essentially just spewing out of these broken, basically just fundamentally broken devices. This will be like 1 in 1,000 or even less of these devices are broken, but they can account for over 50% of the leakage. So this is a really big issue. It represents a couple things. In one sense, it's a real challenge. So you've got an industry with 500,000 wells, millions of miles of pipe, lots of compressors. How do you find the 1 in 1,000 that's broken? So that's a real challenge. On the other hand, what it shows is that if you can find these guys cheaply and fix them, you can actually solve something like, we think, half the leakage by just fixing a really small number of devices. Very profitable. If you can get the company to find these cheaply, they'll make a lot of money fixing these. And so this is one of the things we're working on in a phase two project, is to develop technology to find these leaks rapidly, cheaply, greatly reduce the cost of finding them so that it makes sense for the companies to go out and fix them right away.
So that's a win-win situation. The company will save some money. The environment will save some methane leaked out. Now, to be honest, I didn't understand what the study found out about certain regions with high levels of methane versus the national picture. Where are those high emission areas and what did you conclude about them?
Yeah, so this is interesting. There's been a number of studies, largely airplane-based studies in natural gas-producing regions that have come out over the last year. So there was a study in Colorado and there was a study in Utah in particular that found very high leakage rates from the production system, between 4 and 9% in their central estimates. To give you a sense, a 9% leakage rate is well above that at which it makes sense to burn coal instead of natural gas. This is a very significant leakage rate, and that was found in Utah. What we find is that when you take those results and say, okay, we've observed leakage in Colorado, we've observed leakage in Utah, very high leakage rates, if you scale that out to the whole industry, it just doesn't make sense. So there's been a variety of studies that have flown over the entire country. So instead of focusing on a given region, they'll fly airplanes and take measurements from towers across the entire country. They find a certain excess amount of excess methane in the atmosphere. What you find is these national scale studies, they find a lot of excess methane, but they don't find that much excess methane. And so what we think is that these regional studies that are finding very high leakage rates out of, let's say, Utah, that just can't be the case nationally, because otherwise these very detailed studies, often across the whole country, they use thousands and thousands of measurements, would be finding more methane over basically the entire U.S. than we currently observe. And so we think that these highest level studies can essentially put a cap on how much methane is possibly being emitted from the gas industry. And we think these cases that have been observed from the airplanes are likely outliers, because they don't line up with the largest scale studies.
This is Radio EcoShock with our guest, Dr. Adam Brandt from Stanford University. He's the lead author of a new paper titled Methane Leaks from the North American Natural Gas Systems. Well, now, both the EPA and the industry have been publishing data about the amounts of methane escaping. How do your new figures compare to what was previously said about it?
Yeah, so our new figure for methane emissions overall is about 1.5 times what EPA is estimating emissions are. And so we think there's about 50% excess methane, and that's our central estimate. We were not able to come to consensus about a number for the natural gas industry. We actually think, and that so for methane overall, we think the best estimate from these very large scale studies is this factor of 1.5. So we have 50% excess methane. We weren't able to come up with a natural gas industry specific number. We actually think that the evidence is sufficiently mixed and just sort of confusing at this point, honestly, that we think that it's premature to draw an estimate for how much of this excess is being contributed from the natural gas industry. The numbers are kind of all over the map, and we just need more science to understand what the gas industry is contributing to this overall excess.
Yes, that's something I think we'd all like to know. What percentage of overall methane emissions in the United States from all sources comes from the natural gas system? But I'm gathering that we just don't know that.
No, we don't know that. I mean, we know that there's lots of evidence from gas-specific studies in a region in Texas or Colorado or Utah that show that emissions are likely higher than EPA says. But we can't go from those and really say, okay, nationally, this is the contribution. We know that other sources are contributing as well. There's emissions from cows and manure. There's emissions from landfills. So we think there's other things contributing as well, that this isn't just a natural gas problem, but we can't say other than that how much the gas industry is contributing, which we would like to have said, but we just couldn't come to scientific agreement on that.
And when we look at the whole system, do we also count what happens when these pipelines blow up, as one just did in Kentucky? They can burn for days. That's a lot of carbon right there. Should we add that to the climate risk of using natural gas?
Ideally, you would. Thankfully, those types of events tend to actually be pretty rare. We had a recent explosion, very unfortunate, in California as well, where some homes and lives were lost. Thankfully, those don't happen very much, so they're not likely to be contributing a huge amount. But yes, ideally, you would make an estimate for that sort of loss and add that as well.
So, Adam Brandt, we know any methane going into the atmosphere is a bad idea, especially given the carbon dioxide we're already pumping up there. Still, your team concluded that natural gas is better than coal in some applications. Please tell us about that.
Yeah, sure. So when you look at climate warming potential over a 100-year timescale, which is the more typical or more commonly used timescale to assess climate impacts, what you find is that if the gas system is leaking less than something around 7% of the gas, then it's better to use to replace our coal-fired power plants with natural gas power plants. even given the fact that we believe that there's an underestimate from the EPA numbers, we don't think the underestimate is that significant. We think it's likely still better to use natural gas than coal. On a 20-year basis, and this is another way to assess the impacts, you require much less leakage in order to have benefit from using gas instead of coal. And this is because methane has a short lifetime in the atmosphere. It has lots of impact up front, and then it decays away and has less impact over time.
Well, you know, I've seen people react both ways to your study. People who are against gas are saying, well, look, they underestimated it. It's terrible. And people who are for gas are saying, well, you know, it's better than coal. This is what they found. So it goes both ways, your study.
Yeah, we this is one of the things we noticed. It's sort of it's almost a test. Depending on what opinion you came in about the gas industry with, you can find evidence to support your cause. So, yeah, so we think it's worse than EPA says, the leakage problem, but likely not as bad as the most extreme estimates. And so we somewhat come down in the middle. So some people view the study positively and some people view the study negatively with respect to the emissions problem. So perhaps that means we're doing something right. I'm not sure.
And another thing in your study that surprised a few folks, maybe even the president himself, was when you found switching trucks from diesel fuel to natural gas may not help the climate. Can you talk about that, please?
Yeah. So diesel trucks and diesel buses are quite efficient. Diesel engines are already more efficient than gasoline engines, and they burn quite efficiently. They use the energy quite efficiently. For that reason, you need a pretty stringent requirement. You need a pretty tight gas system without a lot of leaks in order to have gas make sense over diesel. So what the study we used calculated for a leakage percentage at which you would be better off to stay with diesel and not switch to gas was 1.7%. So at 1.7% or above, you should stick with a diesel truck. What we found is that EPA's current estimate is about 1.5%, and so it's really already very close to this cutoff. And we think because of the evidence for excess emissions from the natural gas industry, we're likely above this 1.7% cutoff. And this says that from a climate perspective, we shouldn't switch from diesel trucks to gas trucks or diesel buses to gas buses. Now, there's a lot of good reasons, other reasons, to switch from diesel. I don't really want to ride on a diesel bus. I don't really like to stand next to a diesel bus that's idling or a school bus. They're stinky. You know, there's local air quality concerns. We may be concerned about oil imports and dependence on the Middle East or other issues associated with oil use. So there's likely to be a variety of good reasons to use natural gas buses or natural gas trucks. But from a climate perspective, it doesn't look to be a winner.
Now, you've touched on this already, but I'm wondering if you can expand on it, on ways that you could suggest we reduce this amount of methane leaking out of our natural gas systems.
So a lot of people are working on this around the country, major funding on this from governments, universities, national labs, companies, tons of people are working on this. There's a variety of approaches. So some people are working on very cheap sensors. They'll be like a smoke alarm almost in your house. And you'll station these around natural gas facilities, and they'll essentially set off an alarm when they sniff excess methane. So that's one approach. Another approach is to use remote sensing, such as via aircraft or satellites, to essentially hunt down these leaks using cameras or other sensing technologies, and then essentially alert an operator when a well is leaking. Our technology that we're going to be working on in our second phase study is an airplane-based remote sensing type technology. But there's a lot of ideas out there about how to do this. And really the challenge is you need to do this cheaply and without a lot of labor. Labor is expensive in the oil and gas industry, and this is a big infrastructure with miles and miles of pipe and wells scattered across the landscape. And so once you get guys driving around in trucks, this gets expensive, and this is why these leaks continue. So we need to find a way to make this very cheap to scan these facilities frequently and find the leaks. And so that's what a lot of people are working on. And I'm confident that we can find solutions that will bring the cost of finding these leaks down by a lot. I think it can get a lot cheaper with modern technology.
And what about better regulation, just requiring people, you can't vent it into the atmosphere. You have to capture it. You have to use it, things like that.
Yeah, so EPA is moving on that. So starting in 2015, it's not going to be allowed any longer to vent the emissions associated with hydraulic fracturing, which will be a big step in the right direction, and a lot of companies are already moving in that direction. In addition, Colorado just a few days ago introduced new regulations that require operators to once a month scan their facilities, find the leaks, and fix them. This is a big step forward, we think, towards solving the problem. And so to the extent that more states or the whole country can move in that direction, then we think there's going to be benefit. And to the extent that we can invent technology to make this very cheap, it'll become a win-win situation.
It's been great talking with you. The latest report on this problem is found in the paper Methane Leaks from the North American Natural Gas Systems. It was published in the February 14th edition of the journal Science. Find the links you need in my show blog at ecoshock.info. We've been talking with the lead author from the Department of Energy Resources Engineering at Stanford University, Dr. Adam R. Brandt. Thank you so much for telling us about your work.
Thank you.
Radio EcoShock.